going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Real, real good buddy of the show, Corey LaJoy. Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Rob Brown Show. On the Fan Upstate, Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo. And you, just a couple of crackers talking sports this early in the AM, starting off hour number three of the radio program. During the break, I had a buddy who texted me because we're talking NFL draft this morning. And one of the things that we are talking about in the draft this AM is wild cards. What are some of the things that could happen that could maybe throw a wrench into this? And a buddy of mine texted me a tweet that came out earlier this morning that I gave some thought to during the break. It's from Diana Russini of The Athletic. And Russini said in her tweet, quote, "The Giants are in an unenviable spot, and league sources I spoke to seem split on what they'll do with the number three pick and at quarterback." And that's interesting, Zoe, because as I said yesterday on the show, in putting together the mock draft that I put together, and I'm going to have two of them for you, the one that I've done this morning and the one that I will do tomorrow, which is one where I will have some swings for the fences, metaphorically speaking. I said the hardest part about this draft for me was getting past the first three spots, was getting past the number one overall to Tennessee. That one wasn't tough. That's gonna be Cam Ward at this point. We're all sure of it. But then getting Cleveland and New York. And it's for similar but different reasons. I'm getting the vibe Cleveland thinks that they are indeed a quarterback away. They're not. But it feels like they think they are. And then, as I've mentioned a couple of times, when you got your owner coming out at the owners' meetings a couple of weeks ago and saying that they believe that the Deshaun Watson situation was a, quote, big swing and a miss, end quote. You wonder if they might make a pick to try to find a franchise quarterback and build around him moving forward instead of building a team and finding the franchise quarterback later. Hence the question mark about Shedeur Sanders. But the more I think about it, the more I kind of think maybe the New York Giants are kind of in a similar situation. The Giants, if we're really just looking at it on paper, they've got Russell Wilson, they've got Jameis Winston. That was two very interesting stories. But then let's look at the rest of this team. They've got Malik Nabers, who, yeah, like I'm starting to get maybe a little bit of locker room issue vibes around him, but he's a great player. They've got Wandale Robinson. They've got Darius Slayton. That's not a bad trio of wide receivers. I think they could upgrade the running back spot a little bit. Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary. I think they could upgrade the running back spot a little bit. I don't think Ashton Jante at three is the pick there, but I think they could upgrade the running back spot. They're good on the defensive side of the football, specifically across the front seven, which means Abdul Carter would be an asset, ain't no doubt. But that would be a clear and obvious illustration of taking best player available over need. Here's my question when I look at the Giants, when I look at Joe Shane, who, let's start with this. After the issue with Saquon Barkley, for the last really 2 years running, but certainly letting Saquon walk, not paying Saquon, paying Danny Dimes, having Saquon go on and win a Super Bowl with the Eagles, et cetera, et cetera. We don't usually use this phrase too often, great one about a general manager, but is this a hot seat year for Joe Shane with the New York Giants? Because it kind of feels to me like it almost has to be.
I'm curious about when the last time there was not a hot seat moment for anyone on the Giants.
I mean, last year, like Joe Shane kept his job last year, kept his job this offseason. They haven't made a move yet. Like I would think like now is the time, but I could be wrong. But let's say it is. Let's say it's a hot seat year for Joe Shane. Here's my question mark. Does Joe Shane throw a Hail Mary here to go get a quarterback and just pray to the football gods that whoever he goes with, Shador, Jackson, Dart, whatever, pray to the football gods that that quarterback works out their rookie year, that they get a CJ Stroud year out of the guy, that they get a holy crap, turns out this dude can ball a little bit year out of the guy? Do they offer up the 2 pick? Because again, the reports are starting to circulate around a little bit that the Giants are offering up the 2 pick, or at least have received a call from a quote number of teams, end quote, offering up bounties for the number 2 pick. Do they maybe trade back into the 12, 15, 17 range if somebody's going to make a hell of a deal and end up with a quarterback there, or do they just go Abdul Carter? Because the article from Rossini has a quote that she attributes to another general manager out of the AFC that says Joe Shane can either throw a Hail Mary and save himself or do what's good for the future of the team, end quote. And the more I think about that, the more I think Tennessee's not a wild card at 1. I guess to some degree, Cleveland is a wild card at 2 because they could go quarterback if they do like the most Cleveland thing ever and decide that, oh yeah, we're definitely a quarterback away and make the move for Shador. They could do something weird and be a wild card. But I think the Giants at 3 might be the most interesting wild card in the first round because of the fact that their general manager, to me, has got to, at this point, frankly, know that this is the year that he either gets it right or he gets himself sent up out of town. And I don't know which one is the answer. I could see them going with a quarterback at 3. I could see them going with a quarterback at 3. I could see them trading back mid-first round, getting a quarterback there. Or I could see them taking Abdul Carter at number 3 and just saying, let's hope to all hopes that that Abdul Carter, Brian Burns on the other side, make a defense so formidable that we just need to score 17 a game and we're going to win. And I don't know which one of those 3 makes the most sense. This is part of the reason I struggled, taking so long to get my mock draft together, was because, and now that I really sit and address it, it's because the New York pick is such a wild card in this whole equation. So I'm interested because I'll tell you, and I said this yesterday, I'll say it again today, and I'll probably say it again tomorrow. This to me, and I think Lonzo nailed it yesterday when he said, and I'm paraphrasing, correct me if I get you wrong here, great one. This is the first time in a minute that the draft genuinely feels compelling. This is the first time in a minute that the draft genuinely feels like must-see TV. This is the first time in a minute that it feels like if I am not watching this draft play out, that I'm going to miss something big because of how many absolute question marks there are and how many absolute question marks there are so early in the draft, including the New York Football Giants. Is any of that off or unfair to you, Great One?
No, and I think the supposed draft gurus are sweating it this year because there's uncertainty in a lot of the first round, and that's going to – there's no way this goes chalk, right? There's no way.
None. I would not be surprised, honestly. I would not be surprised to see 5 to 7 trades on the first day. Honestly, like I would not be shocked to see 5 to 7 trades in the first day. I would not be shocked to see to see Carolina move. I would not be shocked to see the Giants move. I would not be shocked to see, honestly, the Raiders move. Again, I think Janty is the pick there. But I would not be shocked to see them move back.
So there might be so many trades that the Goodell booers get tired.
Yes.
Because he has to keep going back on the stage. And Cleveland has traded their pick to Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. I think it's absolutely a possibility that that we end up in a spot where Rodgers got to change the insoles in his lifts because he's got to walk out to that stage like 12 extra times to announce trades. Honestly, I could see this being I don't know if it's ever happened. I could see this being a year where we have one pick move between two teams while that pick's on the clock, right? Like a team trades out of a pick and then the team that traded into that pick then trades that pick somewhere else. I honestly think, and I could be totally wrong, it may very well just be 1 through 32, maybe one or two trades. But realistically speaking, this is the, I don't really know how to phrase this, because it's not a bad pool of talent, but it's not an elite group of talent. I think it is a deeper pool of very good talent than we usually have. I think usually we have a wider pool of elite top-notch talent. And then I think we have a shallower pool of very good talent. I think this year we have a very shallow pool of elite talent, like 3 to 4 guys. And then I think we have a very wide pool of exceptionally or of very talented football players. Which means that, to me, once you get to pick 6, 7 down to pick really like 40, I think that the pool of guys you could take, the guys that you will take at 35, 36, could end up having as much value as the guys that you're taking at 12 and 13. And because of that, I think there will be a team or two. I'll put it this way, Great One. I think there will be a team or two in this draft that will value the Belichickian method. I think there will be a team or two that may leave this draft with like 3 or 4 players, but end up with like 6 or 7 additional picks over the next 2 drafts. I think, you know how Belichick, it used to be frustrating. A lot of people used to talk about this. We used to watch Bill Belichick stack and stack and stack and stack picks, right? Like at any given moment, the Patriots would have 7,000 draft picks over the next amount of drafts. And then Hoodie just kept stacking those. And then every now and then he would just unleash a torrent of draft picks. And they end up with like they leave a draft with like 10 players out of it. I got to imagine somebody's going to try to replicate that just because of how wide the pool of good players and how shallow the pool of great players really is in this draft. I could see a number of teams deciding to make multiple trades back just to stockpile talent because they believe we can move out of the first round, have a early to mid second round pick, and get talent that isn't that big of a drop off in grade. That's how this thing feels like it's going to shape up to me tomorrow night.
Is that entertaining? I don't know.
I mean, again, I think when we look at it from the perspective of entertainment, and this is something we all do, it's easy for us to go, oh man, I hope the draft is entertaining. And how we view the concept of entertaining obviously depends on how you watch the draft. What do you define as entertaining? Do you define entertaining as there's a lot of trades and drama in the first round? Do we view entertaining as there's a couple of guys whose stock tanks and they fall down the board? Do we view entertaining as there's a number of reaches that we get to talk about the next day? Do you view entertaining as you lay your sweet little angelic head on your pillow tomorrow night and you go, we got a great player. I'm happy with my team's first round. Like, what do you view as entertaining? And put that into contrast with your general manager doesn't give a damn if you're entertained and frankly shouldn't. My general manager better not be entering the NFL draft as let's go put on a show. My general manager better enter the draft with a plan and a strategy and a contingency plan and a backup strategy for every possible combination. I need, when I see Mickey Loomis on TV, I want to see a stack of binders in front of him. And every one of those binders has a combination of picks that could be made 1 through 8. Every possible combination. And it's like a flow chart. And when Tennessee makes their pick of Cam Ward and we go to 2, and Cleveland makes their pick and they go Travis Henry, all those binders that tell you what to do if Cleveland goes Shador, get knocked off the table. And I got a stack of binders that say, here's what you do if Cleveland takes Shador. Let's look at 3. And then if the Giants go Abdul Carter chalk, then all the binders that have Cleveland takes Travis Hunter and New York takes Shador Sanders get knocked off the table. And now we have binders that say, here's what you do if Cleveland takes Travis Hunter and New York takes Abdul Carter. And now we got these binders. Like, a plan, a backup plan, a contingency plan, and an emergency plan in case that contingency plan fails. I don't care if I feel like I just watched the most compelling soap opera of all time. I want my team to walk out of there with a player that I go, we just got better.
See, that's it. That's the thing. I was wondering if you watch it as a fan because they're in the end, I mean, other drafts are pretty boring. That's why they're not really on TV. And I know the NBA. I mean... It's not like this. This is the most entertaining draft out of all the sports. There's a reason why it's in prime time. There's a reason why people watch this. And when I watch it, I'm watching for my team. I'm just wondering, are you the guy, or do we have people listening out there, or the guys that will break their TV or scream, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. That was so stupid. And I mean, obviously, the team I root for has a pretty good record of getting really good draft picks and some considered reaches, but being able to do a lot with those draft picks because of the coaching and the system and all that kind of stuff. There are so many different kinds of people watching this. What makes the NFL draft so entertaining?
I mean, I think that's the answer. There's so many people watching this, and it's subjective. Here is what, to me, at the core of it, what makes the NFL entertaining. The percentage of people who watch college basketball is not high. The percentage of people who watch college baseball is not high. The percentage of people who watch college soccer is not high. The percentage of people who watch any of the other college hockey is not high. The percentage of people who watch any other sport is just not that high. And you add on top of that the fact that the NFL is America's favorite league. That's not a question mark. That's a statement. That ends with a period. It's America's favorite league. So you combine the fact that it's the league that we as a country care about the most, and the talent pool that they are drafting from comes from a league, or whatever you want to call it, the college football ranks, that we are all also very invested in. The NBA draft is absolutely as entertaining subjectively to me as the NFL draft. It's every bit as entertaining, but that is because I watch a lot of college basketball. I know most of these guys. I know most of what these people are. I've seen them play at least a handful of games. The NHL draft, respectfully, because you know I'm a hockey guy now, but the NHL draft is not like wildly over the top popular to me. It's not wildly over the top entertaining because I don't watch college hockey. I don't know a lot about it. I don't follow it. I don't have the time, unfortunately. I wish I did. I wish I had more of it. But it's not as nearly as an available sport to be able to watch, so I don't get to watch as much of it. Guys like my guy Chris Lewis, big hockey guy, big college hockey guy. I'm sure the NFL, the NHL draft is as entertaining to him as the NFL draft is to us. At the end of the day, we're just a football country. And let's be real. Football can do no wrong in our eyes. That's it. All right, let's run to a break. When we come back here in a minute, let's talk about the NBA playoffs. Three games last night. Let's check in with those and what the Lakers did right to get back into it. More importantly, what Luka and LeBron did. We'll talk some NBA playoffs next. Rob Lonzo and you, the Rob Brown Show, the Fan Upstate. Rolling on the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate. Rob Lonzo, the great one, a couple of dogs, and you. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you. Let's talk some.
So you weren't calling me and you a couple of, you're talking about the dogs that are in your room, right? A
couple of dogs. We got that dog. No, I'm talking about my actual dog. There's ignore the mess. That's a room. That's the Remy dog over there. She is like me. She just wants to sleep all the time. And then I introduced the brand new pupper, Rue, R-O-U-X, because I'm just that stereotypical Louisiana kid during the break there. So, yes, literally a couple of dogs hanging out with me here at the Bro Cave in the Casa de Love this a.m. And fortunately doing not much more than sleeping, which is great for me. Let's talk a little National Basketball Association. Two games to none. The Pacers up on top of the Bucks. Damian Lillard did make his return last night. Was not the triumphant one that he had hoped. 14 points on 4 of 13 from the floor. 2 of 8 from range. 7 dimes and 3 rebounds in the contest. Giannis Antetokounmpo continues to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. 34 points, 14 of 20 from the floor, 6 of 10 from the stripe. No three-pointers efforted by Giannis last night. The Bucks only took 35 three-pointers in the game. They ended up converting 14 of them. It was 16 of 36 from behind the arc for the Pacers. Look, we're going to talk to Hayton Asmaria tomorrow. He's a big Sirs guy.
No. It's
stop trying to make that happen, Gretchen.
It's so bad, no matter what.
Yeah, well, you want real bad here, Zoe. I'll give you real bad. He sent me a tweet the other day, and I'm trying to find it. He sent me a tweet the other day from the Pacers official Twitter account where they sent out a graphic that says, "Yes, sirs."
Wow. Wow. What?
I hate it so
much.
Why
does that look blue?
Well, I'm assuming it's coming through over the, we're talking about the live stream, by the way. Those of you that aren't watching the live stream, facebook.com/thefan.
It goes completely blue. It's like, wait a minute. That's not Indiana. What is going on here?
I'll give Indiana credit this. I really do kind of dig their like graffiti paint splatter look. Right. Like a lot of teams have tried the paint splatter look, and I'm not always a big fan. I kind of dig the Pacers like neon yellow and electric blue paint splatter vibe. It's a good look. Very few teams can pull that off. Oregon tried it, and it's like the one thing Oregon's done out of the box that I don't like. The Sirs pulled it off, and I like that. By the way, if he can shorten it to just Sirs, can I just call them the Pays from now on? If they could just drop half their name to go with the nickname, can I just call them the Pays? Ladies and gentlemen, the Indiana Pays. I feel like I'm going to just to aggravate Mario at this point. All right. Look, the at the end of the day, the Pacers just playing efficient basketball. That's really all there is to it. Like if you're looking for a team right now, that if you're an old school basketball fan looking for a team to watch, the Indiana Pacers are it. They're just efficient with the basketball. They shot just shy of 50% last night. They did lift up 90 field goals. They allowed 87 efforts. The Bucks went 44 of 87. Realistically speaking, in terms of the box score last night, everything in the box score, with the exception of the fact that the frontline starters were better, everything in the box score tells me that Milwaukee played well enough to win this game last night. But the Pacers were just more efficient. They had 8 turnovers compared to the 15 of the Bucks, and that's your ball game. That's it. They had better possessions. They had longer possessions. They brought the game to them. They took care of the basketball when they had it. That is literally the extent of this basketball game last night. You're getting, honestly, shocking value out of Pascal Siakam in this series. Tyrese Halliburton is being Tyrese Halliburton. By the way, I saw a survey, and I don't remember where it came from, so take it with the full shaker of salt. But I saw an alleged NBA player survey the other day that said Tyrese Halliburton is the most overrated player in the NBA. Tyrese Halliburton is the most overrated player in the NBA.
That's the guy who didn't get to play in the Olympics, right?
That is one of the players who did not get to play in the Olympics. Also a guy who went 8 of 19 for 35 in 35 minutes, scored 21 points last night, had 5 boards and a dozen assists.
Well, if you don't play with the best of the best, that means the best of the best look at you and said overrated. So I'm gonna go with that being true.
I mean, fair enough. I'm not. I completely disagree. But he's in a pretty good class of players right now. And oh, by the way, is now up 2-0 on Giannis Antetokounmpo in the NBA opening round of the playoffs. Listen, Indiana is just. I'm gonna hate saying this, because it is one of those things that hating ass Mario over here is about. He'll get back to me with. Look, here's how this one plays out to me. This one plays out to me as the Pacers are just. Oh, I hate that I'm going to say this. They're just pacing the game to themselves. That's it. You're playing our style of basketball. It's not going to be over the top. We're not going to try to be electrifying. We're not going to try to run you up and down the floor. We're just going to go be efficient with the ball. We're going to take good shots. We're going to have good shot selection, and we're going to make it frustrating on defense for you to get anything done. Again, I've said it a couple of times this week. I'm almost frustrated with myself with how many times that I have said this. Sometimes the game's not that hard, guys. Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes we overcomplicate things. Sometimes we overcomplicate things to an unnecessary level. And I think that a lot of people are doing just that with the Indiana Pacers. I think they're overcomplicating. The team just plays efficient basketball. That's it. Sometimes being good and playing efficient basketball will do it. 118-99, the Thunder knock off the Grizzlies. They are now up 2-0 in their series with Memphis. Another case of you got the biggest problem in athletics, boys. Sometimes the other team's just better than you are. Oklahoma City. By the way, somebody pointed this out to me on Monday, and it stuck with me ever since. Oklahoma City has, and I know it's a good offense. We all know it's a good offense. Oklahoma City, great one, had the highest accumulated point margin in NBA history. They outscored everybody else more than they were scored on at a higher proficiency rating than anybody else in the history of the NBA. That's how good this offense was this year.
So we should go ahead and crown them then.
No, because they are young and they've still got some spots that they got to get there. What I am saying is they're sweeping Memphis. What I am saying is I came into this saying the East is Cleveland versus Boston. Is there anybody that's pushing back from East from Cleveland versus Boston as your Eastern Conference Finals? I don't think there is, right? Like, I like this Pacers team a lot. I think Boston can change the game with them. Cleveland, I think I would give a shot at falling to the Pacers in round two, but I think Cleveland's just got too much over offense to overcome that. There's nobody, sorry, Knicks, Pistons, and Magic. There's nobody in the bottom half of that bracket that's going to beat the Boston Celtics. Over in the West, and I said coming into this on, what, Monday when we started our NBA playoff preview, the only team in this bracket that cannot win the championship out of the West to me is Memphis. That's the only team that's just not good enough to do it. The Thunder certainly are. The Nuggets certainly are. The Clippers, as they showed you with the Nuggets, are. The Lakers are. The Timberwolves are. The Rockets are. And the Golden State Warriors with Jimmy Buckets on this team, all seven of the eight teams are good enough to win the West. If Oklahoma City doesn't win the West this year, it will solely be because there's seven really good teams on that side of the bracket. Like seven really good teams, and also Memphis. The bad news for everybody else, specifically the Nuggets and the Clippers in the second round, is that by the time I think everybody else is in a shootout in round one, by the time that everybody else is done with their shootout, the series is tied 1-1 between the Nuggets and the Clippers. The Lakers and the Timberwolves are tied at 1-1. And I would not be shocked if the Rockets get back game number two at home and that series is tied 1-1. If all three of these series are tied 1-1 and they all go to a 4-3 win, the Thunder are going to have like a week off. They're going to have like a week off to R&R before the next round. All right, we'll talk some more NBA playoffs. We'll talk some NHL playoffs as the Carolina Hurricanes up 2-0 over the Jersey Devils and more. The Rob Brown Show rolls on after this. It is the Fan Upstate. The Rose Bowl has traditionally been kicked off a little bit later on in the day. It is moving time slots. The Rose Bowl game is moving up 1 hour. It will now kick off at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is now part of a New Year's Day triple header of college football playoff quarterfinals that was announced yesterday by the CFP and by ESPN. The New Year's Day schedule will now have a 4 p.m. start for the Rose Bowl. It will have a noon start for the Capital One Orange Bowl, and the All-State Sugar Bowl will now kick off at 8 p.m., all of which will start 1 hour earlier than usual. David Eads, the chief executive office of the Tournament of Roses, said, quote, "The Pasadena Tournament of Roses is confident that the one-hour time shift to the traditional kickoff time of the Rose Bowl presented by Prudential will help to improve the overall timing for all playoff games on January 1st. A mid-afternoon game has always been important to the tradition of the granddaddy of them all, but this small timing adjustment will not impact the Rose Bowl game experience for our participants or attendees," end quote. I kind of got two conflicting emotions on this, Lonzo. The first one is, okay, like, not a big deal, right? Like, it's 1 hour earlier in the day. It allows all three games to be fit in, and you're not starting the Sugar Bowl at 9 or 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which, selfishly, is good for me, because New Year's Day is absolutely what we in the debauchery business call a recovery day. But those of us in the debauchery business who were on the wrong side of 40 years old also call January 2nd a recovery day. So if you're not going to make me stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching a college football playoff game, it is appreciated in advance for this upcoming New Year's Day.
Yeah, this just has to do with it being a playoff game. I mean,
it has to do with it being a playoff game. And it has to do with there being three of those playoff games all in that day and fitting all of them in, which, again, sincerely appreciate it. So on one hand, there's part of me that goes, not really a big deal. There isn't much to this. Like, they moved it up an hour. It's not the end of the world. But there's another side of this story that I think is very interesting. and it is this. The Rose Bowl has historically, and I think justifiably, but historically, considered itself to be the bowl game, right? Like it's the bowl game. No matter what other bowl games happen, the Rose Bowl is the bowl game. And if the Rose Bowl that easily, and again, we don't know what, if any, negotiations there were. We don't know if this is just something that the Rose Bowl looked at and said, this is good. This is the best setup. This is what it is. I don't know. Whatever the negotiations are that went into this, the Rose Bowl, it seems like, right? Because there were no reports that this was coming. There were no reports that this was a conversation. There was no reporting coming out that this was a negotiation in place. There were no reports that any of the bowl games might be moving around or moving away. Just like that, it just happens. So my other thought here is, and again, to me, not a big deal at all, though I know to some of you, it very well might be. If the Rose Bowl is that willing to roll over and to change what has historically been its spot, its place, does that not kind of insist to you to some degree that college football is going to acquiesce to whatever the playoff people want? They are going to give the playoff people whatever it is that the playoff people ultimately want, right? If the playoff people say, hey, Rose Bowl, you know, that bowl game that historically and traditionally believes that it is better than everything else in the college football landscape, justifiable or not, earned or not, we want you to move. Again, not a huge move. We're not talking about asking them to move days. We're not asking them to move to a different spot. We're not asking them to make a big move, but it is a move from their traditional and long-running spot. If they were that willing to that quickly say, yeah, that's fine, we'll go ahead and move our historic game out of its historic time slot, doesn't that kind of say that complete, and again, maybe it already has, and maybe this is just kind of another indicator. I don't know. You tell me. Does it not kind of feel like college football, scratch that, does it not feel like the college football playoff has honestly just gained complete and total monopolistic control over college football? Like, college football playoff says what goes, and everything else in college football will fit in around those things. That's how
is this unforeseen? I mean, is this a bad thing? I think it kind of goes with the territory when they went, especially going to the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, I don't think it's unforeseen. In fact, I think if anything, it was probably predictable, but it's kind of one of those things, great one, where it's like, when you know something's going to happen, it doesn't make it hurt less when you get punched in the face. You know what I mean? Right? Like, it just because you know something is going to happen doesn't mean it becomes easy to just roll with the punch.
Hey,
like,
I grew up in Big Ten country, so the Rose Bowl was the game. That was it. That's what you were trying to get to every year. The Buckeyes were trying to get to the Rose Bowl. It lost that a long time ago. Now it's just, it went from being just a bowl to now being probably always going to be a playoff bowl. So, I mean, it's where you go to play a playoff game. And I know you've got the parade. When's the last time you watched the Rose Parade?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I've ever watched the Rose Parade.
Okay. So I did growing up, because that was part of getting ready to watch Ohio State play in the Rose Bowl, watching the Rose Parade. I haven't watched it in a long time either.
I mean,
it's a big deal. It's really cool how they make everything out of flowers. I mean, that's an awesome thing. But I think some of these bowls, as soon as we went to playoffs, especially now with expanded playoffs, it's just a playoff venue.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Listen, I I think that when we talk about the tradition, the historicity, the charm, the pageantry, all of these different things, when we think about all of these different aspects of college football, to me, what this says is if you want to keep all that, if you want all that to stay a thing, if you want all that to remain what makes college football special, I am 1,000% on board. I think sometimes a lot of people make this mistake, misjudgment about me that I don't care anything about those things. And that's factually incorrect. I do care about all those things. But I think what I would say is that for me, those things have to be protected at the school level, right? Like if you want those things to be special, they've got to be protected by the school level. And there are some things you're just not going to be able to do anything about. Traditional rivalries is something that if you want them, you're going to have to lobby your state legislatures and you're going to have to lobby your schools to keep them. All right. And I'm talking obviously out of conference rivalries. You're going to have to lobby for your legislature to protect them, as some states have done. And you're going to have to lobby for your school to protect them and keep those out of conference rivalries on the schedule. But all the stuff about the tradition and the historicity and all that, like that's going to have to be protected by the schools themselves. Because again, this isn't a monumental shift. This isn't a cataclysmic shift. One of the things that I didn't think would happen, but I could have seen happening, was that they split up the New Year's Day bowl games and we have like two playoff games a day. And two of those bowl games traditionally played on New Year's Day move somewhere, whether it's like January 2nd or everything shifts up a day and a couple of them go to New Year's Eve and we spread, whatever the case might be. They would spread those things out a little bit more. Instead of having three back-to-back-to-back triple header New Year's Day, whatever. I'm glad that it's just an hour shift. And honestly, as a resident of the Eastern time zone, I'm actually really happy they did this because, again, an 8 o'clock kick is a hell of a lot better than a 10 p.m. kick for the great one and I. But if the Rose Bowl was that willing to just say, Yeah, we'll move our time. I think all it says to me ultimately, and realistically speaking, is that if the Rose Bowl is going to roll over on its traditionally, I hate talking like this because it's so damn dramatic, but traditionally sacred time slot, like it's time. This is its time slot. There's no question this is when that game gets played. If they were willing to just say, sure thing, college football playoff, you got it, we'll move for you. What else is going to be requested as a change that college football is just going to say yes to? Whatever you want, college football playoff committee, your wish is our command. We will make the move. I don't know. And again, it may not even be that big of a deal. I may be being a wee bit dramatic, as I am prone to do. But if that's not a fight they were going to have to keep their traditional time slot in that spot, then how easy is it going to be to take a little bit more and take a little bit more? And even though this is not like one of the grand traditions in college football, the game itself is. The game itself is a tradition. The game itself is historic. The pageantry that goes into it is historic. And this is why I have said for a very long time, if it is the pride and the pageantry and the tradition of college football that makes college football special to you, not just the game, not just the players, but the pageantry that comes with the logos on the side of the helmets and the logos in the end zones and at midfield and the songs played by the marching bands, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If those are the things that make college football special to you, then you had better make sure that you as fans are protecting them at your level. And you better make sure that you are asking your schools to protect them at that level, because that is the I think, highest level of protection that those traditions and that pageantry has anymore. No one above the school, and honestly, some of the schools don't either, but no one above the school level really cares all that much about the pride and the pageantry and the tradition of all of this stuff if there's money on the table to be grabbed. That just is what it is. All right. That is 3 hours in the books. When we come back here in just a few minutes, we got one left. And it is up to you what we talk about. I have got the Hub City Spartanburger text line open at 844-326-3663. By the way, how about the Burgers getting win number one in the I-85 yesterday? Knocking off the Greenville Drive 1-0, a showdown, a shootout. I may take my happy little bootay over to the Berg tonight to watch a little upstate pro baseball. We'll talk about that in the next hour of the show. We'll get some Braves ball in here as well. All of that and more. After a disappointed and frustrated Lonzo powers his way through this sports flash.
Struggle is real, yo. Four Clemson Tiger pitchers combined for a three-hit shutout win over Georgia at home last night, improving the Tigers to 36-7 on the season. Tigers had seven hits on the night, including a Dominic Listy RBI triple in the second inning. Clemson opens a three-game set at NC State tomorrow. South Carolina Gamecocks baseball team picked up a 3-2 10-inning win over North Florida yesterday, courtesy of a KJ Scobie ground rule double to center, which scored the game winner in the 10th, the first extra inning walk-off win of the year for South Carolina. Speaking of first ever, the first ever game in the I-85 rivalry between the Hub City Spartanburgers and Greenville Drive went to the Burgers. A rain-delayed 1-0 shutout win. Leandro Lopez went five innings, striking out eight, driving batters without a walk and giving up just three hits.